our hearts still goes out to all the people affected directly or indirectly by what's happening in Eastern Europe. Our prayers for them. We pray for peace. This is not a show for us to give an opinion. We just want peace to reign. In the same vein, we want to say congratulations before the show starts to Wilfred Ndidi, the Nigerian, yeah, and Leicester midfield engine, who recently marked his 200 game for Leicester City. Nobody thought that would happen when he joined the club in 2017. It's still the best show on radio, also on your podcast. It's News Instant Sport. The voice is different today because, as usual, every once in a while, we get to kidnap Babo. My name is Onyekachi, aka The Oracle. I have half of the gang with me. Today, with me is Olawale. I also have Shei. Olawale, would you like to introduce yourself to the fans and listeners?
Yeah, good day, everyone listening to this or watching these around the world. Welcome to the show once again. I sincerely hope that you are going to enjoy your time with us. The Manchester derby didn't go the way we expected, but probably the result was probably expected.
I have to say big kudos to both of you who are staunch Man United fans, coming here after such a shellacking by your M13 neighbors, but and the one who won, we expected him to be here, but he's not here. So maybe we'll not talk about Arsenal today. Shei, want to say hi to the listeners and viewers?
Yeah, hello, sport fans around the world, and welcome to today's show. And like Olawale said, the Manchester derby didn't go the way we thought it would, even though we know there's a potential situation like what happened. But of course, it was quite disheartening to see Manchester United players not putting in the kind of energy, the kind of determination you would like to see in a derby match. On that note, welcome to the show.
That is a very scathing remark, and I believe very objective as well. Shei, thank you very much. We'll dissect this and most of the results from the weekend as well in due time. But for now, let's start with the best of the rest. And even though this is football related, I still think it concerns pretty much every other thing, as whatever is happening in Russia, between Russia and Ukraine, seems to be impacting everyone. One of those who has been severely impacted right now, as we know, is Roman Abramovich, the embattled owner of Chelsea, who last week tried his best to hand over the reins of the club to a trust, so to speak. But we realized the trust were unwilling to take up that mandate and that mantle. And this led to him ultimately and eventually putting up that club for sale. When it bought this club in 2003, this was a club lying in the doldrums, entertaining as they were, but not achieving much. And just a few weeks ago, he completed the entire trophy cabinet by winning the Club World Cup, which was the one thing missing from his resume. Olawale, I really would want to start with you on this. How will potentially selling Chelsea to a new owner or new owners, how will this impact the club? Short term, long term, will Chelsea remain a juggernaut? They may in the short term, but will they remain relevant if a new owner, similar to what is happening in Manchester United or Arsenal, come in? What do you think?
Yeah, like you rightly said, in the short term, we don't expect it to impact the club negatively, or I think the status quo will still remain. I think what we should be looking towards to is the long term. My first major concern is this was something that was probably not planned, if not for the war. I don't think Abramovich was probably thinking along this line 3 or 4 weeks ago.
100%.
So to have put a club like that for sale, it's something that is going to be difficult. I think everything will depend on the new owner coming in. Is he a football lover? It's going to be a key thing. There'll be a lot of news of potential buyers. And from the look of things, it might likely be a consortium of guys from the US, which probably I have a bit of reservation about. Because the truth is, an average investor coming from the US who probably didn't grow up in Europe, I'm not sure he's probably a football fan.
A passionate football fan,
yeah,
you're right.
They might just be attracted to the brand and probably the potential financial incomes they are bringing in, not necessarily about the footballing side, which is actually the biggest concern, because we've seen it at United, probably Liverpool, a bit different, because I think the owner understand that they could not run the club. They actually had a better structure on ground, but like we've seen in United, the Glazers family doesn't really, football is not their kind of a thing. They are not right. passionate about it.
Right.
They are just more interested in it. I don't think they are intentionally not investing the right way or running the club the right way, but because of their lack of understanding of what football means and not passionate about the club, it has really affected the club a lot since Alex Ferguson left. So we have the major concern about Chelsea too, which will be on the long term. If they are bringing in somebody who is not passionate about the game, no matter how rich he is, that could spell doom for the club, and that could be the beginning of, let me say, underinvestment or investing on the wrong things. Mm-hmm. So, I jokingly said on one of these WhatsApp platforms I am in, I told them on Wednesday, I told the Chelsea fan that whatever we happen, just don't sell to the Americans.
And that is very, very spot on, because when you look at what's happening, especially, I mean, there's no bigger sample size than Manchester United. You see how the club is run and all that. But one major thing that Manchester United, in spite of the bad ownership, they still enjoy, which Chelsea does not enjoy, is the fact that every year, United still seems to show or report a profit at the end of the year. Abramovich has valued Chelsea at £3 billion. But since 2003, Chelsea has only reported or recorded a profit, I believe, just once, when they posted a £49 or £50 million profit about 4 or 5 years ago. Now, if a consortium of American owners or an individual from the US or any other person wants to come solely because of the economy or the economy surrounding owning a brand in Europe, I'm not going to ask you how viable, because we'll leave that for the financial expert. I'm pretty much saying they may not be very forthcoming, as Abramovich has been forthcoming, pumping in as much as 1.5 billion of his personal funds into the club and writing off that debt. Olaole alluded to it, that buying a non-passionate owner might lead to a divestment or reduction in investment. If that is the case, when this club says, no, make your own money yourself, don't you think the effect will be more short term? Because Tomatsuko right now does not even believe, he doesn't even know what the future holds for him if a new owner should come right now. Sheyi, what do you think?
Kachi, thank you. I think basically, we can see from what even Roman has said all week long, when all this thing started happening. He mentioned that the club was actually, I think him buying the club was out of his passion for the game and not really for commercial vibes, as in terms of he wants to make money out of the club or not. And that has really shown in how much he has invested, as in the amount of his personal funds he invested in the club, even when the club has not been making so much profit, in terms of what you spend and what you actually make. And that has really shown in the success of Chelsea in the last 20 years that Roman has owned the club. It has actually catapulted Chelsea to be one of the top three in England, talking about, in recent times, talking about the trophies they won, the bragging rights that they have in the league at the moment. And your question is about, will these actually go forward if if Chelsea happens to be sold to a non-passionate owner,
who does not want to spend money?
Who does not want to spend? Who doesn't want to really? Who centers his own interest around making profit? Will definitely say we can never see the same thing that has happened over the last 20 years.
20 years.
I can assure you of that. Because we've seen what has happened to Manchester United, what the mm-hmm. fans kept on clamoring for in terms of investing in the squad. It takes a lot of a passionate owner to go ahead to invest in players and even how to pay coaches to be sacked. Roman Abramovich has changed maybe like four coaches in the last 6 years or 7 years thereabout. But guess what? They've won it all. So yes. it takes someone that does not care about the money. He just wants his club at the zenith of the league, of the European football to achieve that. So it's going to be a massive loss for Chelsea fans. I'm very sure they know that. They are probably gearing up for whatever is going to happen post Roman Abramovich. But guess what? Football is a fantastic sport. The world must move on.
Right.
And hopefully they get the type of owner they deserve.
Okay. If they don't, thank you very much. If they don't, then I guess the likes of Manchester United and Arsenal should welcome back all the disgruntled Arsenal fans who left
for Chelsea 20 years ago.
Who left for Chelsea and to the likes of Chelsea and Barcelona or Manchester City.
In as much as I don't want to overknock the Americans too much, we have to recognize the fact that Liverpool is actually being owned by John W. Henry.
Yeah,
who has strategically probably built the team. He might not have spent as much as City and Chelsea, probably not even as United, but they've been very, very smart in their way of spending and the way they build the team. That being said, if they could get somebody like that to who probably, and the good thing is, Roman said is not probably. Chelsea will not have to pay that loan back, which means
he's writing it off.
Cash flow wise, they should be in a safe place. So if they can get the owner who might not be overspending, but who can put in a management team that could be very strategic and optimize whatever they have, I don't think it will be a doomsday for them. But what could be a doomsday for them is because of the valuation of the club, which is like 300 billion. The reason why Roman went for Chelsea then, Roman wanted to buy United. United was more valued than Chelsea at then.
Yeah.
The reason why he bought Chelsea then was this was a team that was not far away. Between 97 and 2003, they got to the Champions League semi-final once. They won the Cup Winners' Cup once. They got this. They won the FA Cup like two times. They finished like 4 points behind Manchester United that won the championship in 1999. So they were not really winning trophies then, but like that, but they were not far off. So, and they were less value. That was why he invested in that club. There's a reason why the Newcastle people, the Saudi Arabian
owners. Yeah.
But I'm not sure they bought Newcastle up to 300 million or 400
million.
No,
they did it.
United is one of the reasons why I'm sure it will be difficult for the Glazers to get a buyer for United, but it is valued at 4 billion.
Yes.
So it is smarter for you to buy a smaller club like Newcastle that has probably the tradition and spend a billion on the squad.
Mm-hmm.
You can easily catch up at all those big teams.
Yes.
So the main worry for them, for anybody to have probably put 3 billion to buy the club, and you are still expecting him to bring in another set of money to invest, it could be a problem. And I just pray that whoever is coming in doesn't do a leverage buyout, this thing that they did for United, whereby
United,
somebody will go and borrow money from the bank to buy the team and now place the debt on the team again.
The collateral on the bank.
That would be very damaging. So I think we should just pray that shouldn't happen to them. Because if United was not a cash generating team on its own, it could have spared them for the team in the past.
Wise words from Olawale. Thank you very much for that analysis. We'll segue right here quickly into the world of MMA And where else can we land except in UFC 272? Two men who have been beaten twice by the undisputed middleweight champion, Usman Kamaru. Two men who were best of friends, were at one time roommates, shared a room together, ultimately became sworn enemies, headlined UFC 272. And even though the fight on its own was not the most explosive, not that it lacked any drama, it showed clearly that the hatred was real. In these two men, I'm talking about Jorge Masvidal and Colby Covington, who headlined UFC 272. The match itself went the entire five rounds, Covington winning by unanimous decision, displaying what he gave an inkling of when he fought Usman the second time, which was relying more on his wrestling abilities and trying to take you down and pin you on the floor. It was a wrestling masterclass, if I put it that way. Not so much for the fans, but enough for Covington himself to come out the winner. Shayi, I wanted to start with you here. What is next for Covington? Obviously, he cannot get another shot at the belt until Usman goes round again. Usman has already done in Nigerian table tennis parlance. Usman has done what they call kantap for him. Usman has kantap both him and Masvidal. Who can Covington look up to? And do you think there's a way back at another title shot, Shay?
Yeah, Kachi, big ups to Covington coming on the back of his loss, second loss to Kamaru late last year, was able to enter into the bout with Masvidal, and it was actually quite dominating in that bout. And just the way he also tried against Kamaru, he launched different takedowns, against Kamaru also in the last fight. And you could see that his wrestling abilities is actually top-notch.
Yes,
talking about what next for Covington, I think it's just need to play around a little, but still wait for the third fight against Kamaru. Because I don't see, if you want to be a world champion, I think that should be your dream. And if you have to try three times, then you have to wait for the third chance. So if you ask me that question, I will say he should take his time and request for a third chance to take on Kamaru. Kamaru himself is almost getting bored.
You can say that again. Yes.
Exactly. Yes. So thereabouts, I think he should just take his time and wait for the top fight. That should be his ultimate goal, his dream, and that's my only advice for him.
Olawale, thanks Shayi for that. I wanted to put a joke in there. I wanted to say the second option would be for Kamaru to leave the weight class for them, so two of them can decide. But maybe that option, Olawale, maybe that should be the question for you. Should, not Kamaru now, but should Covington consider moving up a weight class just to see? Because it looks like right after the middleweight is the light heavyweight. Oh, there is the last style bender there. So maybe maybe he doesn't want to go there. But what really is the next step for both Kamaru, who is the undisputed, and because he's gone around the number one contender twice, the number two contender twice. He's beaten Justin Poirier once. If he gets a shot at Poirier now, which I don't think they will want to give Poirier, because Poirier is not ranked number three in that weight class right now. Should he remain bored, or should he move up a weight class and these two Nigerians should just fight each other? Is that the next viable thing?
I think Kamaru Usman, if you probably ask him probably to consider moving up, I think yes, probably since there is no serious challenger in his category presently. But for somebody like Covington, who is probably not top two in his category now. If he's going to take a step up, how is he going to survive that one? We know what happened to the Nigeria. What's the name of this Nigeria?
Last style bender.
Yeah, when he attempted to move to the
weight class,
and how it ended, and he had to probably drop back to his. So for Covington, I think he can just like he rightly said yesterday that this was a fight of passion, emotions. That probably he allowed his emotion to get to him. I think it could still create a bit of drama because he said he's looking forward to fight one of his old friends too.
Yeah, which Justin is
Poirier, that you are next. I'm coming for you. So I think he can just create a bit of drama in that category, fighting his people he consider as his friends. Probably that could make a bit of news rather than him considering moving to the higher class where he might get whitewashed.
Okay, thank you so much. Thank you very much, guys, for that analysis. We'll move on to the NBA. A lot of things are happening in the NBA. Olale, I have so many questions for you. But we'll start with the one that caught my eye. As much as I don't like to talk about the Lakers because I think they don't have any life, LeBron refused to leave the limelight. On the night after they've lost four straight, they played the second best team in the West, in the Golden State Warriors, who obviously were missing their lynch man in Draymond Green. It lived up to the billings. LeBron dropped 56, becoming just the fourth person age 37 or older to drop more than 56 points after, I think, Grant Hill, Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, the late great Kobe, now LeBron. So two questions for you. Is this a sign of life? Have the Lakers finally found a way to get Russell Westbrook to become their sixth man and come from the bench? Two, what is happening with the Warriors? Olale.
This is a very great... I think Russell Westbrook, looking at the, the Lakers, that was a fantastic victory for them yesterday against the number three seed Warriors. But if you look at the trend in the past 15-20 games, they will probably, after losing like four straight games, they will win one, they will go back to their old habit. I just think this is just one of those games that LeBron 56 points was able to leave them. Russell Westbrook actually started the game yesterday. I don't know how it's going to work out, either as a sixth man or even as a starter, but not probably having much of the ball or playing the way he actually wanted to play. I just think this Lakers team, it's unfortunate that it's an old roster, this thing. A lot of veteran guys in that squad. I think their major problem is lack of energy. Mm-hmm. They can't sustain playing very well for
fast pace. Yeah.
One thing I think you should observe in the last few losses they had, especially when they lost to the Mavericks, even the stars of the other team are now targeting LeBron. Like, LeBron can still post good numbers, but it's looking like the father time is catching on him, whereby he cannot lift or single-handedly lift elevate average team to success. Yes. Like he was able to do when he was a bit younger. Probably that was what he overestimated his power to do that when he tried to do something most people who know basketball felt that it is not an ideal combination, having Carmelo Anthony, having Russell Westbrook, and the injury prone Anthony Davis together with Anthony a bunch Davis. Of guys on one veteran contract.
Veteran contract, Rajon Rondo and Malik
So with no genuine talent around. So I just think that yesterday victory was just probably one off. And for the Warriors, I think unfortunately, we all felt that if Klay Thompson joined the team, then they will become unstoppable because they were very unstoppable up to that point. But unfortunately, when Klay came, when Klay joined, it probably coincided with the period Draymond Green got injured. And mm-hmm. what these have really reinforced is the fact that Draymond Green is probably underrated. His contribution is the pick and roll partner for Steph Curry. Mm-hmm. He's the emotional leader of the team. He dictates the pace of the team when it comes to defending. So they really miss him on one hand. On the other hand, I felt Klay Thompson's integration into the first team has probably disrupted the flow of the team.
Flow.
Jordan Poole who was the backcourt partner to Steph Curry has probably dropped to the bench. And we've not really seen that impact we probably saw from him at the beginning of the season. He has not been able to replicate that coming off the bench. So I think they are probably in the shooting slump period on one hand, integration problem on the other, and Draymond Green. But I expect them to overcome this by the time they get into the playoffs.
Thank you very much. Shay, I don't know if you have something to add, but I wanted to ask you specifically a question concerning LeBron and the Lakers. Do you think LeBron should consider leaving the Lakers on his own, or should he stay, and should the Lakers risk trading for LeBron? I'm saying so because Shaquille O'Neal came during the week to say if the Lakers make the mistake of trading LeBron, they will not win for a very long time. How risky is it for the Lakers to trade away LeBron and show the rest of the world that if you're a big star, we can treat you the way we treated LeBron? What do you think, Shay?
Wow, I think LeBron is quite a massive star when it comes to the NBA. Mm-hmm. Your question is, should he walk away himself or should mm-hmm. Lakers trade him out? I think he still has a lot to offer Lakers. I think before this last match, they were on like 3 or 4 losing streak thereabouts.
Yes,
okay. And he still came out tops in this last game, which really shows that he still carries the team. Olawale mentioned that maybe his presence and his control on the game is actually winning, which mm-hmm. I think I agree to that. But you still see that when it comes to the party, he's still the biggest star on that court. So in my own opinion, I think Lakers should look for how to play and add to the... I think they need to get some players to add to the personality on the court. LeBron can really not only carry them the way they probably thought he would, mm-hmm. but right now, I still think his presence is needed. The younger players seeing a whole LeBron on the court will also help the rest of the team. So I will not advise them to trade him.
To make that choice.
At this moment.
Okay. And it's very interesting. Thank you very much. It is really interesting because they mortgage the future of their youths and their trades to get the much always injured Anthony Davis. I was one of those who thought it could work. I knew that just looking at the style of play, it may not work, but that because they had that off-season conversation, LeBron, Ross, and AD, that they would make it work, you know? So it's become very, very untenable. But just before we go, we end this, a quick question. And in just 2 minutes or less than 1 minute, Olawale, the 76ers versus the Heat over the weekend. Is that a preview of the Eastern Conference Final, or am I dreaming too much?
Probably I'm dreaming too much. I'm not sure Giannis will be happy with this because they still have his. I saw their game on Friday with the Chicago Bulls, even though Chicago Bulls are still missing Lonzo Ball and this other guy that I joined from the Lakers. I think it's still early to predict if that is going to be the potential Eastern Conference final. I think the Bucks will have a lot to say in this, depending on, I think everything will depend on how the pairings goes. If the Bucks and Miami it find themselves to be in the same half of the draw,
brackets, yes,
then probably it will not be a it will not be the dream. It will not be the Western Eastern Conference final matchups. But if peradventure both of them find themselves in different half of the draw, yes, it's a possibility. But even at that, I'm not sure any of the two teams now will be confident enough to say, okay, they can get this done over the Bucks in 7 games. And if as good as the Miami team is, I'm not sure they could even, I think they could be a slight favorite, but I'm not sure they could, if they are the overwhelming favorite over the Chicago Bulls, if they get their full contingent back. So I think it's early. And the only thing about that game yesterday was, unfortunately, James Harden didn't play.
James Harden did not play.
I haven't watched their first 3 games since Harden joined, 2 against the Knicks, 1 against the Timberwolves. It was, they played very well.
Yes.
Different dimension, but I wanted to see them against a very solid team to have a bit of an opinion. But based on the question you ask, I think it's too early to say if they are what will make this to look a realistic conference final. Is both of them peradventure find themselves in different half of the, what do you call, of the
Eastern Conference playoff draw. Thank you so much, Olawale. One of our studio analysts who has been away for a long time, Tunde, and he's a staunch James Harden supporter. He said it was a deliberate ploy by Doc Rivers not to show his full hand by not playing James Harden. Nah, and that was why the 76ers lost. Just really quickly before we go on a break, we'll go straight to boxing. And Shayi, I'm going to defer this to you. The rematch between Alexander Usyk and Anthony Joshua has been called off due to the current issue happening between Ukraine and Russia. But what are the other major news happening in the world of boxing? Shayi, you want to give us an update?
Unfortunately, we'll have to wait to see Usyk, Anthony Joshua. Anyway, if there is going to be any Usyk, Anthony Joshua. Also, over the last week, there was a first press conference for the Fury White bout that's for the WBC heavyweight belt, and White decided not to show up at the press conference. Fury mentioned that is the first step to throwing in the white towel from Dylan White. I think that was very, very wrong for White not to go for that press conference. He's definitely still bitter about the pause split.
Anyway, yes.
I think he should be looking at beating Fury at the pause split. Anyway, that's my own opinion. Also, there was a press conference, first press conference for Canelo Bivol also. Canelo is going to be coming back by May 7th. And guess what? He's stepping higher. He's going to light middleweight to face Bivol in a title challenge there. Canelo is actually taking big steps in boxing.
Is he putting all his belts on the line?
Weight division. Also, there was press conference for the unification bout for welterweight division.
The welterweight division, I think that's really between Errol Spence and Ugas, which should take place on April 16th. We lost Shayi really briefly there. Hopefully he joins us back. I'm really interested in seeing that fight. The one that has piqued my interest is the Canelo one. That is really what I want to see fighters do. You've dominated your weight class. Even if you go a step higher, nobody, it's similar to what
happened back.
We got Shayi back. It's similar to what Israel Adesanya did. Nobody is taking that loss Israel Adesanya had in the upper weight class nobody is using it against him because he went to an upper weight class. So I'm really confident, really so excited to hear about the Canelo stuff. Shay, before you continue, is Canelo putting his belt on the line even though he's moving to another weight class?
He's not going to be putting, really be putting the belt on the line because the bout is actually a light middleweight championship.
Okay. Okay.
So the bout is actually for the light middleweight championship. And it's actually interesting to see Canelo do that. And I think in the present boxing world, Canelo is still the only boxer we've seen try to do that. I think the last person is probably Pacquiao that did that, that went through like five different weight divisions conquering them. I was talking about the welterweight division, seeing unification bouts between Ugas and Errol Spence. Errol Spence coming back again after the surgery to his retina that he was unable to fight Pacquiao at the at that time. And Ugas fought Pacquiao, won the WBO belt. And now we have a unification fight between Errol Spence, who holds WBC and IBF. Now, this is a first step to an undisputed welterweight division because we have Terence Crawford holding at one side, holding the WBF belt at one side. So it's actually getting very, very interesting in that particular weight division also.
Thank you so very much. We'll go on a quick break right now. We've taken almost 40 minutes discussing other sports, which is unprecedented. When we return, we'll go into all things football. Stay tuned. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to the show. We're really grateful that you're staying here with us. It's still, like I said, the best news sports show on radio and also on YouTube. We're going into all things football. And where else do we start but the in the land where that invented the game of football? The English Premier League is hotting up. We had amazing games over the weekend. And the one we really want to talk about, which I'm sure these two men or two of my panelists are not interested in talking about, is the Manchester Derby. Now, before Pep Guardiola, even during Pep Guardiola, even during the era of the much maligned Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, Manchester City was bodied every year by Manchester United. Ragnik doesn't seem to have the key. Over the weekend, City walloped Manchester United by 4-1. That was how one-sided the results were. Goals, 2 goals by Kevin De Bruyne, 2 goals also by Riyad Mahrez, sandwiched between a goal by Jadon Sancho. City now has or maintains their 6-point lead at the top of the table. Olawale, as painful as this may be, what does this mean? Like, what really is the issue? Is it the personnel? Will a new coach do well with this team? Or should we just, you know what, throw away the bathwater, throw away the baby, fetch new water, and just start impregnating a new, trying for a new baby, pardon my language, and trying for a new baby? What is wrong with United?
Okay. I'm not sure. No, I think, not lowering the standard at this stage. I don't think losing to City should be probably made a big is a big deal. I think except for the margin
and the manner,
losing to City shouldn't have been a big deal. I think United major regret since Ralph Rangnick probably took over has been their inability to win games. They are expected to, they were favorite to win. I think for me, that is the biggest issue. For going forward, whether to a new coach or the players, I think it's a combination of many things. When a team like this, a team of United stature, is probably not playing well or not getting desired results, it is very hard to probably consider that this has been going on for a couple of years. It is very hard for you to pinpoint it at just one particular thing. It's a multiple factor. Now they have a new, is it executive vice chairman or Richard Arnold, who took over from, what's the name of these are beloved guy, our friend, Ed Woodward, mm-hmm. that left, I think, a month or 2 months ago. I just hope they learn from the past and do a bit of comprehensive review of how things have been done, not on the part of the coaches alone, even the backroom staff or them, the management. Have they been listening to the coaches, or they've been probably doing things looking at commercial part of the game alone? And you have to look at the recruitment too. If you have £150 million to spend, do we just spend it on two players who are very popular, or investing it deeply in the squad? So a lot of introspection. We have to do a lot of introspection in the summer. That is if they want to go for, they probably want to, they want things to improve. Because for mm-hmm. me, I think it's a, what do you call it? I think the issue of United has been overflowed over a period of time.
Yeah.
It's something that is very simple, in as much as you have to bring a good coaching. And I think one of the things United should do is, I think Ralf Rangnick should be moved to management level. Because one of the confusion you will see from United is, they said Darren Fletcher is it technical director? What,
yeah, technical director.
And you see the technical director sitting on the bench with the coach, even in training session, participating in rondos with the team. I don't think technical director should be doing that. So that just shows it's a confusion everywhere. I think some of these titles are just by name, not by what they're actually doing. So they need to do a lot of introspection, and that is where I think the ownership have not been, not that they've been deliberately not, I don't want to use that. I don't think anybody would deliberately want to just destroy a team they own. I mm-hmm. think their lack of knowledge about the sport on one hand, and them not showing interest. Because I think them could have made a better impact in probably restructuring rather than all these set of guys who seems not to know what they are doing.
Olawale, thank you very much. Sheyi, United now reminds me, in NBA, reminds me of the Lakers. A bunch of individual talents, some past their prime, some should not even be wearing the United jersey or representing that club. And never seem to be working. Owners not really knowing what they should do. Let's start from the coaching. Since Sir Alex Ferguson left, I think there's been 4 coaches, 2 interim coaches, so let's say about 6 of them, and 3 trophies in that time. And we've heard different names, Pochettino, the coach of Ajax, I can't seem to remember his name now.
Ten Hagen,
yeah. The entertaining coach of RB Leipzig. Is it Leipzig or Salzburg? Who really should United be looking at? And secondly, how much power to change the club, to change the players? Maybe to probably tell Ronaldo, You're a 30-minute player right now. You can't play start games for me anymore. Be an impact sub. Whoever comes in, would that person have that kind of power? Who should come in, Sheyi, in your opinion, as an aggrieved fan? And should that person be given as much power as to hire and fire?
Okay. First question, who do I think should come in? I'm actually not so convinced with the major 2 options on ground at the moment. And why? My reasons, I still don't think they have the stature and the commanding personality, yeah, presence to handle these Manchester United players. We've seen a particular Mourinho lost a loss to the player power. And I'm thinking if these guys come, then it will only be the board giving the full authority to the coach to revamp the whole team to his own taste. And that is what I think it should be. If we are talking about Ten Hagen as the Ajax coach, I still think the Manchester United job might be a little bit too big for him. Right. Apologies for saying that. Pochettino coming from PSG might be a little bit better. But at the same time, I don't have the full... I just don't have the confidence in both coaches at the moment. I would like to see a much more experienced coach that has taken care of the likes of very top teams in Europe. That's why Ancelotti. I'll always look towards Ancelotti first. And right now, that's a no-no. That's a no-go area. So I find it very hard to see a coach that's going to undo that. Now, talking about the next coach coming in, if it should be given the full authority, I think yes. And I want to believe that is what they are working towards. The reason why Manchester United did not fortify the team in January really shows that they are looking forward to the summer. They want to do a lot. They want to make a lot of decisions in the summer. So right now, everything we are seeing, it's just typical of what has happened over the last 2 years. It is just still a deja vu. They have to wait for the summer. I still don't know if the present coach, that's Ragnik, is going to have so much influence on what is going to happen in summer. We are here to see that. If he's going to have so much impact in that, then I might... Hey, Debo, you're welcome. We might be a little
catchy,
bit...
Please. Catchy, a little okay. bit. I think
this is a deliberate attempt by Debo to talk on the Arsenal
please.
Game.
You have to, please, you have to, please remove him. Please, you have to remove him.
We are not going to ask questions about Arsenal. Rest assured.
I'm not even comfortable. I'm not comfortable with Ali. Please remove him. I'm not comfortable with Ali. Please remove him. Now.
I'll just put him to the side. Shay, thank you. I'm sorry. Apologies for cutting into your question.
Exactly.
To go into the other results affecting the top four as well as the Premiership, Chelsea, by virtue of four second half goals, piled on the misery on Burnley, winning 4-0, goals by a much improved Rhys James, two for Kai Havertz, and also one for Christian Pulisic. Even though this does not affect the top four, I just feel because of the money they've invested in the club, I should say this, Newcastle United is on the bounce. They've collected 18 out of 24 available points, also doing that over the weekend, winning 2-1, safely above all the trouble happening between 15th and 20th right now. I think it's a massive thing Eddie Howe has done. I'm not sure why Shea did not mention Eddie Howe as one of the few people that should look into the Manchester United job. But I will leave that where it is.
Probably Graham Potter.
Can see anybody would do for Manchester United right now.
We don't want your opinion, Debo.
Can you mute him, please?
We don't want Debo's opinion now. But moving on to the club, very close to Debo's heart, Arsenal continues their rapid rise, cementing their hold on top four, winning Watford 3-2, goals from Martinelli, Saka, and I think Martin Odegaard as well. Even though they have three games to play to catch up to the number of games Manchester United has played. And I think they are just 6 points behind third place Chelsea. I think that's really impressive. I'm not going to ask Debo that. Debo is just an onlooker today. Olali, really quickly, how impressive is what Arsenal are doing now to you, considering how they started the season, not winning, I think, their first three or first four games, and ultimately banishing all their demons?
Yeah, I think if you take a look at the Arsenal team right from, around November, December, you could see that consistency in that team, probably except that January period that they lost to City and they couldn't beat Burnley. One thing that is probably different from this Arsenal team is they've been able to win games that they are favorite to win, whether they play well or and they've been consistent in terms of their performance. Their performance have been very consistent, and which probably is one thing is like some players who are probably becoming, who are growing, they are becoming mature and they are a bit getting better. And I think Saka, we probably should give him a bit of kudos. 8 goals with some couple of assists. I think I will be expecting much from him last season. If he can take his game a bit forward, more from Martinelli. I just think the only area now that they look a bit suspicious could be the attacking role. With all due respect to Lacazette, he's not contributing much of goals, although he's bringing a bit of assist. I think they might need to fortify the area. But you could see that consistency over a period of time. They've been playing very well. Teams that you're expecting Arsenal to be, they've been beating them. As bad as it was against Wolves away, when they got that record, they dig in and they make sure that they got that win. Second leg, they didn't give up. For Arsenal to probably get 2 goals in the last, let me say, 5 minutes of the game, that shows you the mental strength. That means the mental strength of the team is getting better. I think I just hope the management of the team will not screw this up. They need to improve on that team. I think Martin Odegaard has been a big revelation for them. I think him finally accepting the fact that he can't play in
Madrid.
He just accepted that, okay, I think Arsenal is my level, and he has probably elevated that team, and he's given them a bit of option, because if not for him, I think Smith Rowe should be starting this team, and he's good enough to start. For now, I think they're the favorite for the fourth position. I think they will get it. From what we have seen from Spurs and Man U, they have a similar problem. Spurs and Man U cannot break down teams with low block defense, and which Arsenal can easily do, which means these two teams will drop points against teams you don't expect them to do so.
Another team, thank you very much, Wale. Another team not dropping points now, and I'm doing my best to make sure I don't ask Debo any question, guys. I'm really doing my best. Another team not dropping points now, ramping up the pressure, is Liverpool, who won by the odd goal against West Ham United, keeping the pace up with Manchester City. But I will just defer. Olawale, you're welcome. Debo, you're welcome to our show as an analyst. The question I have for you is this. Is this, with a 6-point margin, is this league over? Or do you really see potential banana skin? We thought Manchester United would be a potential banana skin. Right now, the only thing left is the return leg between City and Liverpool in April. But even if they do that, they can still win the league by 3 points. Is the season over?
I don't think the season is over. And the number one reason I'll say that is potentially the game between City and Liverpool is going to be a whole level and a blockbuster for everyone. That's a key factor. But let's look at Liverpool's game in hand, which is against Arsenal, potentially. I strongly feel Liverpool will win that game. I strongly feel they will. Against West Ham, they were not so convincing. They were lucky to get the win against West Ham, right? And I'll boil that down to the fact that because of the game they played against Chelsea last weekend, which was a crazy game, and everybody knows that. But I strongly feel the league is not over, that Liverpool will still pull something potentially out of the hat. Maybe on the last day, City will become champions, but it's going to go down to the wire. That's my
thank you so much. And that's what we want. We want a league that goes down to the wire and not where five games to go. All the clubs are giving them.
Kachi, do you know what will happen? I think will happen? Probably what I wish for, but I think what will happen is this. I think Liverpool will win their outstanding game. Something tells me Liverpool is going to take that victory at Etihad and win the league by good difference.
I need to go and get a Liverpool jersey.
Yeah. Kachi, if I might just chip in, if I could just chip in something else, and it's the fact that City themselves bar the game against United and United being United, City has been laboring for victories of recent times. Last couple of games, three, four
games. Because teams know they cannot compete with them man to man. I'll take the Everton game for Everton probably is the only team below the top four that set themselves up to concede possession and use the pace of Richarlison. I can't remember the next person now. And try and see what they could get off the counter-attack. I'm not going to blame any team for trying not to concede four goals. You know, you try to hold them to maybe one goal and pray that you can get a 1-1 draw.
I think ultimately City are still going to draw points. Ultimately, they will. And don't be surprised. Don't be surprised if they are going to drop that point, those points
in the next
against
week.
A team like against a team like Arsenal or the like.
Come on. I mean, realistically. Yes, Shaggy, you had something to add.
Yeah, I actually think both teams are good to take the league, but I think their participation in Europe will actually determine who is going to win the league this season. These are two teams that are on top.
Let me just bust your bubble again. The worst thing that will happen to Man City is for them to draw Chelsea in the quarterfinal of the Champions League.
Let's move on to the La Liga. Things are hotting up, similar to what's happening in England. Real Madrid continues to hold a firm grip on affairs in La Liga, winning Real Sociedad by 4-1, even though Sociedad started the scoring. Valencia also won 3-1. And Barcelona seems to have finally embraced Xavi ball. Close your eyes, Debo, and Arsenal fans, close your ears. winning 2-1 away to Elche. Atletico Madrid also picked up a 3-1 win. So it still remains how it is. Barcelona still slightly, holding on to that fourth position. I believe they are fourth right now, ahead of Atletico Madrid. I'm not going to ask you guys anything.
They are third right now.
Atletico is fourth. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not going to ask you guys any question, but hold it. Next week we'll ask the same question. Is the league over instead? I'll move straight to Italy. I just have to say. in a potential title deciding game between Napoli and AC Milan, Milan won away from home by courtesy of Giroud goal to go back to the top of the table by 2 points, albeit having played one game more than Inter Milan. Inter on their own scored five unreplied goals, split between Dzeko and I think it's Martinez. So it's still the two Milan club top of the table. Napoli sitting third. Atalanta lost surprisingly. Juventus also managed to win by the one goal. Another surprise before we go. I think there's a beautiful question coming for Debo. Well, just before I go there and before we move to the Champions League segment, which will be our last segment for the day, Bayern Munich. It looks like they are lacking motivation right now, right? Because they are putting all their eggs in the Champions League. They drew 1-1 over the weekend. I'm not sure really what's happening. Is it really a farmers league? Do they need a crisis? Because even when they drop point, Dortmund seems not to be taking advantage. Olawale, what do you
think? What did you say?
Yeah, You see, in the past, when even Bayern was even dominating, probably after they have dominated for like 2 or 3 years, one of these teams will spring up. It could be the Dortmund, it could be a Wolfsburg, it could be a Schalke for who probably give them a run for their money, even though they might eventually win, or probably the team. We saw Wolfsburg doing it, I think, in 2009 with Gravity and Dzeko. Yeah, we saw
Dortmund doing it with Jürgen Klopp
back to back. But since then, it's been probably business as usual for Bayern. So of course, lack of motivation will set in. Mm-hmm. And I just think for them, the only competition for them now is the Champions League, I think they'll be very motivated. They'll be waiting for Salzburg because they nearly lost that first leg against the predictions of most analysts. So
including myself,
that is where their focus is going to be now.
Okay, thank you, Debo. Olawale, sorry. Debo, there's a beautiful question coming for you. Sheyi, please, the floor is yours.
Yeah, thank you, Kachi. Okay, one question for Debo. Okay, at this stage of the Premier League, do you still trust Arteta's decision and his gut so far?
Yeah, Sheyi, thank you very much for that question. Honestly, I've never had any doubt about Arteta.
You call him Abacha.
Yeah, Sonny Abacha, exactly. My problem with Sonny Abacha, Mikel Arteta, has always been his man management style. You don't fight with people and throw them under the bus. And how long do you want to do that? I've never doubted his coaching ability. At least we all know he studied under Guardiola, played under
the professor.
So he's not really a bad coach, 100%. But it's about his man management. How do you integrate people like William Saliba that has spent £30 million on? How do you integrate someone like Aubameyang, even when he's making all the mistakes in the world? How do you make Lucas Torreira happy? How do you make Matteo Guendouzi happy? This could be potentially squad players. And like I was telling someone today, I said, probably. If Mikel Arteta did not throw most of those players under the bus, probably Arsenal would be maybe third on the league now. Because they don't.
I'm not going to allow it. It's blasphemy.
I said probably.
For the league. They cannot.
No. I'm not talking about competing for the league.
It's something that they could actually
achieve, you know, given that they're not playing in Europe. Given that they're not playing in Europe this season. So it could have been a chance for them to actually cement and do whatever, qualify for Champions League straight instead of going for the top four. And don't forget that Arsenal has, and I keep telling anybody that cares to listen, Arsenal have not played Spurs. They still have Manchester City. They have Liverpool. They have Chelsea.
No. I think they played Manchester City twice.
They are done with City.
Okay. Yes. But they still have Pool. They have Spurs. They have Chelsea. As of Sunday, Arsenal have played their last game against those guys in the relegation battle. Exactly, relegation battle right now. So I don't want to burst at that bubble, but it's all good. I'm an Arsenal fan. I'm happy for him.
I really wish we did not let you talk.
If I might add, I think I'm not worried about Arsenal fixtures. The reason why I'm very so sure that Arsenal is going to take the fourth place is not even because of Arsenal, it's because of Spurs and United. Spurs and United have shown that you can't trust
them. Consistency.
Not even consistency. They don't have a style of play presently to break down low block defense. Spurs are always... Spurs will excel against teams who are ready to fly, who are ready to play high-line defense. Immediately you want to play a low-block defense, they lack that idea of how they want to play.
That's the problem. Sorry for cutting you short. Just to broadcast what you said, I feel Conte's approach to the team right now is to play counter-attacking football where you have Son and Kane doing all the work in front. You know, they can sit back, eat your counter. But if you are playing a low block defense, like you said, that is not going to happen. Because at every point, you have like five defenders defending against the Son.
Exactly.
Thank you so much, guys. I know we could, if we had the time, we could go on and on. But we have to wrap up the show. And to do that, we'll move to the Champions League. The UCL returns this week with the second leg of the round of 16 games. I'm not going to ask you guys to analyze. I really want to take down your predictions for the four games we're having this week.
Please do.
And I want to know. Because I don't know what I'll be giving you guys. But we're going to start on Tuesday. Liverpool plays Inter Milan. And they currently hold a 2-0 advantage. Sheyi, who's winning the second leg?
I still need to give it to Liverpool. I think they will be going to that game with a lot of confidence. And apart from that, to just consolidate the 2-0 they got at the San Siro. I definitely have to root for them on this.
Okay. Olale, Liverpool, Inter Milan.
Liverpool will win the game on aggregate, but I think it could be a 2-1 victory for them. I don't think it will be that easy. I think, Inter Milan how to prove a point. Probably they will 2-1 on the night.
Liverpool, okay. Debo?
Definitely Liverpool.
Okay, moving really quickly. We're really pressed for time now. Bayern Munich versus Salzburg is finally poised at 1-1. Sheyi, who wins?
I think Bayern is going to take this. I believe that match is probably part of what was majorly on their mind and
this weekend.
Didn't let them really take about Leverkusen over the weekend. Okay. Bayern to win 2-0.
2-0. Okay. All right.
Is it Germany?
It's back in Germany. Olale, what do you think? Bayern.
3-0 Bayern. 3-0 Bayern.
3-0 Bayern. Okay. And Debo?
Bayern to win. Slim okay. Victory for them. Adiemi is going to score though.
Adiemi is going to score a penalty. Okay. And on Wednesday, the match of the round, which wasn't like for lack of a drama, but it lacked the goals in the first leg. In the Madrid, it is Real Madrid facing PSG. PSG hold a slight advantage, 0-1. Sheyi, I'm coming back to you. Who wins the second leg and who qualifies?
Yeah, I think the first leg was just a typical Champions League match between two heavyweights. The first leg was supposed to be very tight because it's supposed to be a determinant to the second leg. So I'm going to go for a Real Madrid win. Probably a 3-1 over 120 minutes.
Oh, interesting. That's if you win this, I have to find what network you are using and send you some credit. If you're spot on with the score line, this is the score line of the round for me if this happened. Olale, do you have anything to counter this?
Why don't you ask me this question first? I think my gut feeling is telling me that Madrid is winning by 3-1. I think their vibes are a bit better now. Benzema is in the better shape. I think they are hedging out PSG 3-1 this week.
Wow. Okay. And Debo, anything to counter this two?
Of course, I want Madrid to win. So I feel Madrid should win it. Maybe PSG will qualify though.
PSG to qualify. Ooh. Yeah. Okay, and just we really do have to go now. City, do we really need to ask this question?
City 6-0. 6-0.
It's a 5-5 goal lead advantage right now over Sporting, and they play at the Etihad. Who wins?
I think we should talk about if this is going to be a record setting Champions League time.
I think City will use this game to rest a lot of players.
Okay. Yeah,
they are definitely going to win, but I'm not sure they will repeat the ice score. They had
Olawale. Olawale, if City rest players, they can still score six goals.
Olawale doesn't understand that the second team of Manchester City is better than the first team of Manchester United. He don't understand.
Oh, don't do that.
So it's unanimous City to win. We just don't know by what score line. Okay, 2-0 Olawale. Okay, guys, I've totally enjoyed hosting you guys and getting your opinion. Debo, I want to say big thank you, big shout out to you for allowing me to do this. To the rest of our panelists, Olawale and Shehi, thank you for your insight. Guys, we hope you've enjoyed today's show as much as I did. Please continue to follow us on all our social media handles. Watch us anywhere you want to watch us on our podcast, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcast. Until Debo comes back here next week, keep following sport and continue to pray for peace. This is Kachi, the Oracle, signing out. Bye for now.